You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the No Low Ballers podcast. I'm your host, Logan Medish of High Caliber History. Joined around the table, we have Alan from Gunbroker, we have Dan from Go Wild, and we have Eli Duckworth, the Gen Z social media 1911 savior guy from Cabot and Alchemy. Eli, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
If Ric Flair made custom 1911s, he'd look like that.
Woo! Woo! Yeah, he probably would.
Well, I mean,
he's a slide fitting.
It is a. Yeah, no, we got the Randy Savage.
Yeah, you know. Oh yeah, the 1911 will rise to the top.
So I guess the first question that we have to ask is, you know, with the 1911, you know, it's a 110 plus year old firearms design. You are a 25 year old man. How does someone such as yourself find yourself preaching the gospel of St. John Moses Browning in a world of plastic fantastic?
Yeah, well, you know, one day I was taking a bath, and the sky opened up above me, and John Browning reached his hand down, and, you know, he said, hey, put some clothes on first. But after I did that, he said, you are the chosen one, and here we are. But no, in reality, the 1911s always spoke to me. I've always been someone that was very patriotic, loved America, loved American-made things, loved things that were iconic of America. You know, I'm very into old American cars and a lot of old American stuff in general. So it made sense. First gun that I ever shot was a Colt 1911. First gun I bought when I turned 21, Colt 1911. You know, I actually was in college, and I turned, you know, the gun store didn't open up until a certain time, and I just, as soon as it opened up, teaching lady, I got to go. There's a 1985 Colt government model waiting on me. So, you know, I've always had a fascination for the gun, the fascination for the history mainly.
Sure.
And then, of course, Lord, how do you beat the trigger? I mean, how do you beat the shooting experience? It's the best shooting gun that you can own, in my opinion.
I can't argue that point. I mean, I shot single stack in competition for years just so I didn't have to pay for trigger jobs because it was already good. I was saving money.
Even bad 1911 triggers are still better than the best of other things.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that we have to address when we're talking, you know, Cabot guns and Alchemy guns is that so many people think of the 1911 having, you know, what we call the battle rattle.
Mm.
Right? And I'm gonna pick this one up just because it's not on a stand. And well, I got the tag. I'll hold. Y'all don't hear shit.
Right.
So, and it's not because I'm wearing a headset. So, this is an Alchemy gun here. Which model is this one?
That's Quantico High Cap.
Okay. There is no rattle to that battle at all.
But when you run that, there's no fight or resistance either. It is just smooth as silk.
Right.
Well, and I think that in itself is part of the 1911 history. People. There's a lot of misconception when it comes to the 1911, and I mean a lot. And honestly, one of my jobs at Alchemy is trying to educate people on things that they think are correct. Like, you hear nomenclature like, John Browning designed to be carried cocked and locked.
No, he didn't.
And then you talk about things like the battle rattle, which people forget. It was a gun made – it was a Marshall handgun. It was meant to be made in large quantities quickly by – let's be honest, fairly unskilled labor, and then refurbished and re-arsenaled by even more unskilled labor.
And shot to death by people of unskilled labor.
Correct. Yes, yes.
There's a trend here.
There's a lot of unskilled involved, and it still performed extremely well. And I think that, you know, the gun is designed to work really well, but when you begin to add a little bit of hand fitting. And there was hand fitting on original guns, but people don't understand. Those guns were meant to be dropped in, the parts dropped in, on an assembly line and given to some dude to shoot a Nazi, you know? Right. God bless us. And so now...
Man, that's the most patriotic thing I've heard all day, right?
Eagle screech.
Eagle screech. Jets flying overhead.
And now we don't have any Germans trying to act up yet. And they've learned their lesson, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so we got more time to build guns. And so when you take oversized parts and you fit them correctly, it's a whole different experience. And I'll be honest with you, and you probably know shooting single stack. Shooting a well-fit 1911 versus something like even a 1943 Remington Rand or any production gun, basically, it's a whole different experience. The unlocking of the gun, the recoil impulse of the gun, obviously the accuracy of the gun itself, the trigger pull, everything is a more refined experience. It's everything you love about it, but just taken to a higher level.
Right.
Yeah, and I think what a lot of people forget about the pre-war and wartime guns, they were building with what they had available. You weren't able to get really selective on your grade of steel or anything else. Like, hey, this is what the wartime production brought. Here's steel, make a gun. And sometimes it might not have always been the exact right grade or mix to do it the right way, where now you can be real picky about it.
And then not only that, but, you know, you look at these wartime guns and you look at the finishing. Now, I'm not talking the finish. I'm talking the finishing. Yeah. You know, there's machine marks all over and stuff. But you know what? Not a single person who was hit by a 45 ACP during World War I or World War II went, man, did you see the ugly machining marks on the slide of that gun that just nailed me in the gut? Like, didn't matter. The gun still ran.
Yeah. Dying Nazi noises, yeah. I mean, it's just, it's one of those things where the guns worked really well, and they're just such an integral part of our history. You know, Hollywood obviously has helped with that after the World Wars, and, I mean, it was in service. I mean, it's still in service. It's just not a, you know, major
just
league.
Just not as the official
sidearm.
It's
not official.
Not a frontline unit product.
And honestly, let's think about this. Have we gone downhill since we let off the 1911? Think about it, you know?
Well, you know, in 74 years.
Yeah.
74 years it was the official sidearm of the United States military. I mean, that is a record that is unbroken. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's...
And odds are it probably never will be broken.
It probably will
be. Not the way we look at materials nowadays, no.
Right, because we deal in a disposable world now, whereas this gun was designed in a time... where that wasn't a thing. Disposable was not a thing. There's no styrofoam. There's no microwave TV dinners and stuff like that.
You fixed your refrigerator. You had your radio and your TV fixed.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, and you know, to that point too. I mean, you look at cars. Like, I've got a '63 Galaxy. You know, if it doesn't crank, guess what? I got a toolbox in the back. I go make it crank and keep going. A lot of people nowadays with these computers on wheels, they just call somebody and they're out of car for a few days until some techno dude gets it fixed. And I think that's a whole nother. You know, we just as a country, and I don't even know if it's just a country. I think the world was just a different place.
Yeah.
We talk about this a lot. You know, even though this isn't necessarily. About like the history of the 1911, it seems like the industry goes and they are in a race to the bottom, and we are sitting here trying to keep American craftsmanship alive, and say, who cares if it's the cheapest? Somebody said, well, you know, I can get this cheaper. Okay, go.
So go get it cheaper.
Yeah,
I can name at least three companies off the top of my head that. Damn near put themselves out of business because of the Kaizen Toyota process. Because they'd had a legacy of great customer service, and if you called them up, they'd get on the phone with you for half an hour and talk about what you need, what the product has to do. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're going elk hunting, this is what you're going to need from us, sounds awesome. And then the efficiency experts came in. It's like, no, that should be an email with a part number and nothing else.
Yes,
And people are like, well, F these guys, man. This is not the company I grew up with. And that has gone away. Like you said, it's the race to the bottom. How do we do it faster, cheaper, and with fewer people?
My bosses would be, I hope they don't watch this, they would be very upset to know how long I spent on the phone with some of our customers. You know, and it just ends up like, you know, they call in asking if they can get a ring hammer on something, as they should, and end up talking about the M1 Garand or something, or a lot of our guys are car guys, so they end up talking about cars. And I mean, it's just one of those things where when they work with us, I want them to feel like they're working with Americans. They care about them, you know, not some Turk or some CCP backed, you know, bull crap. I want them to know that this is an American building, this for you. Mm-hmm. And we care about you because we know you're going to stick that in a holster and it's going to, you're going to depend your life on it.
Right. And so we've got two different lineups and lines of guns here. You know, we're talking Cabot and we're talking Alchemy. And so kind of tell us where the overlap is and where the departure is between the two companies.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll be honest with you. There isn't a ton of overlap. I mean, maybe if you just think of it as, well, you have two companies that make 1911s. Mm-hmm. And when you say that out loud, it's like, well, what the heck are you doing? Mm-hmm. And especially when they're too high-end 1911s.
Sure, yeah.
But when you look at what we're doing, and, I mean, I brought good examples, too, of that. Alchemy is a celebration of American craftsmanship as it was.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Cabot is a celebration of American craftsmanship as it can be.
Okay.
So what we do is, on Alchemy, we really sit here and we say, you know, that John Browning, he kind of got it right early on, you know. And let's not deviate too much from that. Mm-hmm. If you look at that gun, you could hand that gun to a doughboy, he probably wouldn't even know it was made in 2023.
Well, you wonder about those sights that you can actually see.
Right.
Otherwise, yeah.
Right. He's like, I can see the hun. You know.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, even in our double stack, we've kept a very traditional round top. That's actually a 1911 slide.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
If you the Butler cut, if you're familiar, a lot of that comes from using a actual, like, a 2011 style slide, because those frames are a little different than a single stack frame, obviously. And so you'll notice that cutback on the frame because we wanted to use a single stack 1911, a real 1911 slide, because ain't nothing that looks as good as it.
Right.
Know? And I tell people all the time, it's a timeless design. It was hot, you know, 100 years ago. It's hot now. It's going to be hot in another 100 years.
Well, I was telling you guys at the booth before, you know, I've had experience with some of the other companies, and I got to tell you, the 2011 companies, you say the phrase double stack 1911 and they lose their mind.
No, they can't.
We do not make that. I mean, they get adamant about it.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
I picked this thing up at the booth and I'm like, holy hell, this is actually a double stack 1911. I mean, this does not feel like I'm holding a 2x4.
No.
It's got everything. It looks great. It's not that big old boxy square. I'm pretty sure I got holsters. In fact, I'm pretty sure I got holsters that'll fit. No.
That's my boss's carry gun, so I'm cool with you.
To be fair, I'm the black finish guy myself. But, you know, I mean, this is an awesome fit. It does not look like a double stack. I love this thing, man.
Right, and you know, a lot of our, well, not all of our Alchemies are 100% hand fit. All the parts are oversized, and let me tell you something. Somebody come up to me and they said, you know, oh, I bet there's, you know, these are expensive. I bet there's a ton of money. I said, you'd be wrong. You know, I ain't doing this for the money, because let me tell you, there is not a lot left on the bone when you spend 20 hours putting together a pistol mm-hmm. and doing it all by hand and doing it by people who you just can't pull off the street here, you know, and do that. I mean, it's an involved process. It's a tough process. But at the end of the day, when you, you know, do this with your hands, you're proud of what you made.
Go ahead.
I was just say, to that point, even the big production houses are now relocating their factories near tech colleges because they're trying to find that skill. And that's, you know, the guys coming in and just feeding CNC machines. I can only imagine what it's like getting the trained gunsmiths and gun fitters that you need to do this quality of work on any form of scale.
Absolutely. It's not easy.
And that's one of the things that, you know, we talked about earlier about unskilled labor, you know, when the design first comes about and putting it together. The guys who are putting these guns together, I mean, this is very skilled labor. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of the checkering and the polishing, like that is not what's being done on a 1911 in 1912. You know, it is, they are turning and burning on those guns.
Absolutely.
And this is someone's baby that they birthed.
Right.
And they put up for adoption to the new owner.
Right.
Essentially.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know. So that brings me to a question then that I want to ask about this is that, you know, this is a double stack 1911. Mm-hmm. If John Moses were to walk through the door behind you, what do you think he would think of that?
Well, I mean, we saw the trend he took towards the end with the high power.
Sure.
And unfortunately, the French ruined that gun.
And then didn't even buy it. The audacity.
I want to like the high power. I want to like the high power, but gosh, mighty. Mm-hmm. That gun had Europe had stained that thing. But anyways, I would hope he'd like it. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, we kind of joke, and you've been very familiar with a lot of our marketing around John Moses.
Oh, yeah.
We kind of joke about that, but I would really hope he would see that and see it as an art form of his original design, you know.
Right.
And speaking about Browning, we are one of the few companies that I've seen that actually make a effort to talk about him.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, like when we have a leather case that's an upgrade case. And I hate logos being all over things. So I've hidden the logo with being black on black. And when you open it up, it says the genius of John Moses Browning, not Alchemy Custom Weaponry. Because at the end of the day, if that man, you know, isn't touched by God and creates the greatest handgun that ever will be made, we have no business. So I would hope he would enjoy that. You know, I mean, other than the grip module, in that wider frame, I mean, it's damn near 1911.
Yeah. I think John would walk in, take a look at that, and his first thought would be, hand me a mag.
See, and the first thing I thought is he walked in, he's probably not saying anything to anyone. He's just, next thing you know, you look over and the
he's
damn thing's in
apart.
A million pieces.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of guy he was. Yep. You know, I mean, his when
how
he passed
they solve that?
When he passed away, you know, over in Liège, you know, have you seen the picture of his desk on the last day before he died? It was a freaking mess.
Yeah, he'd have that gun in 100 pieces.
He'd have it in 100 pieces, and he'd be fascinated by it.
And then he'd come to you with a list of 5 things you could do better.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure.
To which you say, yes, sir, Mr. Browning, and, you know.
Yeah, oh, yes, sir, absolutely.
Like, what if you tweaked an 1/8 of an inch off of this, and you're like, oh,
okay. I'm just going to write it. I think I would probably faint if John Browning was I'm going to be honest with you.
I hear that.
You know, in those moments, like, you know, you're standing in line at the DMV, and you're trying to put your brain anywhere else, I'm always like, what could John Moses Browning have done with a 7-axis CNC machine?
Ruled the world.
Right, exactly. And so now, you know, we've talked about the alchemy line and if it's what a 1911 is and everything. So let's talk a little bit with Cabot now of what a 1911 can be, and because there's a couple interesting designs here that you've brought with you.
Right.
Talk to us about them.
Yeah, so of course Cabot Guns, man, that's a prestigious company to be a part of. You know, Alchemy's still pretty small, and when you say, hey, I work for Alchemy, you're like, oh, I'm not, you know, some people don't know, but when you say, yeah, I work for Cabot, it's
they go, oh, the meteorite company.
Right, the meteorite gun. Mm-hmm. You know, we made a gun out of meteorite, and, you know, it's a trope I use a lot, and it's, you know, people come up and we say, oh, yeah, you know, all of our steel is domestic sourced, and all of our parts are domestic sourced. And I'm like, you know what, that's not true. Actually, and then people will be like, oh, you probably get something from Korea or China. I say, oh, no. Space. And they're like, what do you mean space?
It's intergalactic.
And I'm like,
and then Apple stole that whole campaign with the titanium, with the little asteroid flying through the rings and eventually landing and becoming an iPhone. I mean, they ripped you off.
Yeah,
man.
I know. We're cease and desist going that way. But, you know, and so that's what we're known for. But we do so much really, really cool stuff. So I'm going to get to that gun in just a second because it's pretty unique and new. But this is a good representation of what Cabot does. So this is the ultimate bedside, which, you know, bedside gun, and it's pretty ultimate. It's a full Damascus slide, and I'm talking real Damascus. You see a lot of these things that people say they're Damascus, and it's just like, you know, engraved or etched steel.
It's a Damascus knife that you bought at the flea market for $12.
If you look at the back of this Joker, you will see the cross section of that piece of Damascus. Mm-hmm. And people will say, well, you know, I want my, they'll look at this gun, they'll say, oh yeah, you know, I want the Damascus on my gun to look just like this. And we'll say,
can't do it.
We don't do finishes. We do guns. You got to buy a gun.
And I'm like, that Damascus is made like that. And it's that piece of bar stock is the only time that's going to look like that.
Right.
It might look better, you know?
Right. It's like snowflakes.
Right.
You know, they are one of a kind.
And, you know, we just really push the envelope of what we can do. You know, I wanted to bring, but, you know, of course, time. We have front sights made out of sapphires. You know, mag catches made with emeralds encrusted. We have pieces of the moon, if you believe in such a landing, that we've encrusted into guns. I'm an American. I believe we went to the moon, okay? Listen.
The other countries, I don't know.
Yeah. And Ruskies, not a chance. You know, we just really push the envelope of what a 1911 can be. And even our, like, base model guns, we do super high-grade machining. Mm-hmm. Whereas everything on that gun is hand-built, this, there's still hand-fitting involved. Like, barrels, you really need to get a good one. You really got to get in there and gunsmith fit it. But, like, a lot of these parts are done in-house. We build everything. And speaking of that, that's why that sight's stainless steel. Like, this whole gun is stainless steel because we made all the parts on it.
Right.
And so it's a really neat thing that we've done, and there's a lot of money, a lot of time in the CNC. And this is sort of to your question, well, what could he do with a CNC?
That's what he would do.
Yeah. And then to this gun, this is the full stainless steel Insurrection. And I just think it looks so gangster, so that's why I chose the full stainless. But I'm a hard chrome guy, so maybe that's why, too.
I love y'all's naming convention on both brands, by the way. It's just fantastic.
Well, and Eli, when you say full stainless, you mean
full
stainless.
Full stainless. So a lot of companies will use, you know, different grip modules. Even on the Alchemy Quantico High Cap, we have, you know, a Kevlar and carbon fiber and all sorts of other scientific words into that grip module. But that Joker right there is full stainless, and it's got some girth. It's got some weight, you know. You know that's in your hand. It ain't like these sissy polymer guns. You ain't going to mistake that. So The cool thing about the Insurrection, it can be ported, it can be not. It's got a cool barrel hood there, and it's our first entry into the double stack market. And it's kind of one of those things where we sat around and said, does Cabot need to do that? And then we're like, well, why not? You know, like that's always, I love that about our company. It's like,
right.
Why not?
Need is not something that really enters into the American vocabulary.
Absolutely.
Like if you find yourself, do I really need them? You need to be looking now at your birth certificate and be like, was I born in the States? Like,
my gosh. And so that gun is, that gun's a really special gun. We spent a lot of time R&D in that. As you know, the 2011 market's pretty, 2011 double stack, and please don't sue me, Staccato. The double stack market is super competitive, so we wanted to make sure our gun was done right, but we also wanted to do it in Cabot's flavor. And of course, sure. I don't know if you've heard, we do the gun of the month. Mm-hmm. The Gun of the Month Club, which is for not people like me. So
I think you could put all four of us together, and it's still not for us.
I'm already trying to figure out how many kidneys I have to sell for one of these.
I don't
let
think
alone.
You have enough kidneys. Well, no, you probably got enough.
I didn't say I was selling my kidneys.
Oh.
Well, so then you're buying one for all of us. Then.
Well, then you can just go ahead and get the full Damascus Insurrection.
Oh, there
so
we go.
My friend's kidneys aren't that good. They're well used. So.
We have a full Damascus. Other than the grip module, actually, it's still the stainless steel, but it's a full Damascus frame, and then slide. That's going to be on that gun, and it's over at the booth. But it's really something special. And
I'm waiting for you to tell me the next thing you guys are going to do are actually make fully Damascus bullets, and you're gonna, you know,
and magazines
and magazines, yeah, you know, but I think bullets like that wouldn't that just be really freaking cool to have some Damascus bullets.
Well, here, think about this though. Let's say, you know, some rapscallion comes at you, if you know, wanting your wallet or threatening your life, and you pull that and you're like, wait, dude, come on. This is too expensive of a process.
I mean, to be fair, the gun will stop the encounter, but the beauty of it will probably save some lives. Like,
right.
I don't want to shoot you because I don't want this in evidence.
Right, right.
Or you know, if you do end up having to shoot the guy, you know, once the coroner shows up, like, can you dig that out?
Can
of
you
here
get that
and
out?
Give that
yeah,
back
yeah.
To me?
I
like,
need that back.
I'm
going to
reload that. Yeah,
that
you know?
I mean, if it's stainless, you probably can.
You probably can. You know,
but it's a you know, and I say this all the time to people. Gosh, I just look back and I'm like, as a 25-year-old, you know, that's obsessed with 1911s. Like, people don't realize I own two guns that aren't John Browning pistols, and it's one's a CZ that I'm not.
It was a nice attempt.
Yeah,
at
yeah, and yeah. Then the other one's a LTT 92. But I mean, I've got 30 1911s, four or five pocket hammerlesses, a 1902 military. You know, I've got all the greatest hits of his handguns, and I wish I had a BAR. But I look back.
Modus.
Okay.
And I look back and I think, man, how lucky am I? 25 years old. I get to work for a really gangster company where we make just cool stuff and we're not afraid to, you know, do it well and not worry about, oh, is this going to be cheap enough for people to buy? You know, it's just a really, it's a big honor, you know, and especially supporting American craftsmanship still.
The only thing I wish you would do differently is quit saying that you're 25 because it's making my knees hurt when you say it. You know?
Well, you know, old man.
Yeah.
The future is now,
the
old man.
The future is now, old man, and the future is 1911s.
He is kind of like a spider monkey on Mountain Dew, you know?
A little bit, you know?
And I piss my...
So we've been talking just about how many tactical lever actions are at the show, and these guys used to give me grief because I got a Mossberg. It was like the first tactical lever action 10 years ago, and everyone's like, you can't mess with the classic design, whatever, whatever. And now, you know, what's old is cool again, but also upgraded. Are you guys seeing renewed interest in... You know, I'm sure you did have some people that are like, why are you doing these exotic finishes? Why are you doing all of this, you know, upgrading and mounting modern optics on it? Are you seeing renewed interest? Is it the diehards are always going to be the diehards and you're seeing constant, you know, a steady interest in it? Are you seeing any, you know, changes in the market?
Yeah, well, first of all, what's old has always been cool. So let's just...
I am cool. Okay.
Yeah.
me and my creaky knees.
We're getting cooler every day.
That's right.
But
never been cooler.
To your point, you know, it's really interesting. I gotta love Staccato. I really think they changed the way that people perceived the 1911.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a natural progression. We found that, and I'm talking generally, not specifically to our customers, generally. I believe they've thought, you know, there'd been a big tactical uprising from the 2000 GWA era that's kind of come in. And then people were like, oh, 1911s aren't, you know, that isn't a GWA gun. That isn't a tactical gun. And then Staccato starts producing a reliable, you know, double stack gun. And people realize what makes those guns, you know, awesome. And it's not the double stack magazine. Mm-hmm. It's the trigger. Mm-hmm. It's the recoil impulse. And it's all the things you'll find that come from the 1911.
But what's funny, though, is to pull that off, they had to completely rebrand their name to say we are now a tactical defensive company.
Right, right, right.
That and they learned what STI now meant to own you. Google it as opposed to what it used to be. Yeah.
Right. But I've been seeing that. And I'll be honest with you. I've been seeing a younger and younger crowd come into Alchemy. Cabot's there's some cost involved that young people can't necessarily always get into. But people are like, you know what? I'm tired of, you know, what everyone else has.
Sure.
I want to carry a 45. And I'll be honest with you. We've had a pretty hardcore marketing campaign of like, that's a man's gun. Mm-hmm. Okay? That puts hair on your chest. And people have really responded to it pretty well. We, you know, especially at Alchemy, we don't really take ourselves too seriously.
Oh, what? I know. I've seen the signs.
So that's been a really big thing for young folks, you know. And me being young, like, that is one of my biggest things at the company is I want – it's not even about Alchemy. Like, people don't realize. It's not about Alchemy. It's not about my paycheck. It's about I want to make the 1911 appeal to young people.
Right.
Okay, because I want to see the 1911 go another 100 years and another 100 years of that until we're fighting aliens with them.
Yeah.
You know?
Boy, I wish we had another 100 years right now.
I know.
Oh, y'all are tapped out.
Well, yes. Well, I tell you, you know, a lot of people, when they finish up going to church, you know, when church is over on Sunday, they feel themselves invigorated and ready to take on the world. And after spending some time sitting here talking with you, Eli, I feel invigorated and ready to take on the world with the 1911.
Praise the Browning. You know,
praise the Browning.
It would be the third time it took on the world.
Yeah, well, it's coming.
It's coming.
It's coming. So
we're dusting them off.
That's right. So, Eli, thank you so much for spending some time with us and talking to us about Cabot and Alchemy. And it's just – y'all are doing amazing stuff and truly doing the Lord's work.
That's right. Thank you so much. I appreciate y'all having me. Y'all have taken enough money. Gun brokers taking enough of my money. I'm glad I took a little bit of your time.
Good deal.
All right. See y'all.
All right. Well, that's it for another episode of the No Low Ballers podcast. Appreciate each and every one of you who has tuned in either on the audio version or the video version. Make sure you're subscribed on your favorite platform. Leave us some likes and comments and reviews. We do read and respond to it all. We appreciate each and every one of you being here and consuming this show because hopefully you're having as much fun watching it as we have making it, because without you, there is no us, and we love being us. We have a great time on this show. So we will see you right here on the next episode of the No Low Ballers podcast.